Our next speaker is Dr. William Ron. He's from Oklahoma State University, and he did his PhD in 1985 in University of Nebraska. He's the current project leader in nutrient management. He annually has 10 grad students on average, working in a variety of agricultural research projects. New work includes the development of pocket sensors, alternative planters for third world farmers, I need to have one of that, biplant and fertilization equipment and algorithms, international collaboration with CIMMYT, you name it, it's a long list. It's really a pleasure to have him present his topic today, which is in digitizing the human sensor. Dr. Ron, please.
Thank you, Brenda. I'm not good with microphones. I'll try and speak louder. Thank you, Brenda, and thank you, Olga, for coordinating this. I do greatly appreciate being included. That Olga had wanted some interesting... She had an interesting request that... I don't know, it was kind of sad. When we get to the last slide, you'll kind of see why it was kind of a... I don't know. Thoughtful, but somewhat sad. But I also, Dr. Thomason, is he still here? Want to congratulate Wade. Wade is my very first student to be an ASA fellow. And so what a fantastic thing to happen this year. And I look forward to being at the fellow inauguration for Dr. Tabana and also for Olga. There's nothing more rewarding than to see your students do well. So what a gift to have had so many students. I've had 86 now, and I'm counting. So, and Brenda, I don't know which one she was.
27.
This was one incredible student and faculty member at LSU. And if Wade had been here, I wanted to mention that we have, on the sensor side from his presentation, we've most recently moved into a climatological scale for when it is that we determine to get that NDVI yield relationship. And it's really been fun, but you have to have a lot of data. And so we went back and had 1999 data all the way up to 2017 that said, look, you've got to have between 90 and 100 cumulative GDDs more than zero. We use 40 degrees Fahrenheit as that threshold before you can go in there and predict the yield. So that yield potential, it was really a nice finding for us because what we were using morphological scales. And the interpretation of morphological scales, it depends on the individual. You know, Natasha goes out there and she tells me that it's Fekes 3 and the other guy's telling me it's 4. And we're basically just using the mesonet, which is, and for those of you that are not familiar, in Oklahoma, you know, 77 counties, all of them have more than one weather stations. We can get those GDD numbers really precisely. In terms of the farmers can go in there, we've also developed a little app to say, that, you know, when should they be predicting yield, but more importantly, when should they be predicting what the fertilizer end rate is going to be using the response index that was mentioned earlier by Wade. So that's been fun. I mean, it's proceeding. And what's curious is that both Wade, Brenda, Natasha, all the students of mine that I paid to come today. I didn't want, but anyway, most kind of them, because we've used their data. So we've gone back and we've got this mine of data on NDVI and yield. It's been so much fun, but thank you, Brenda. Thanks, Natasha. Wade, I see Romulo. We've used some of his data as well, so thank you. I didn't plan on talking about that. I haven't gotten past this first slide, but I'm moving. Again, a fun exercise, but this was on the hand planter. So we work on the sensor side, you know we do, but this has been a project that comes from my time at CIMMYT in the early 80s that I was based in Central America. Can we better use that human component to use our hand planner better? And so that was the context of that question. And I think we can. So the kicker is that the hand planner embeds a lot of that research that we did and that we do. It doesn't take the research component out of it, but we would not have developed the hand planner and had these ideas unless we had the research that was behind it. So this one is simply that the issue of having homogeneity of plant stands and the ability to increase those yields is embedded in a hand planner that you don't necessarily see. But we had to have the research to document as much. And this is one of those where we were going in and planting 2 to 3 seeds per hole, which is what they do in Central America. They do the same thing in Africa. That, you know, what were the cost of that? So one of the things that hand planter does for us is it drops one seed. It's not perfect, but it drops one seed per strike, and seldom, if we get the right drum, drops a couple. But again, the research that said, look, the value of having one seed per drop and the tax that you get for having three that then all three might emerge, they compete for moisture and nutrients and then abort before producing yield. The value of mid-season fertilizer nitrogen. So the hand planter works also as a fertilizer applicator simply by changing that internal drum that you see on the upper left. That they have to see that, or they don't have to see that, but we have to know that because there's a huge benefit from going in mid-season and at least just getting that fertilizer incorporated versus broadcasting it on the surface, which is what they're doing right now. I don't know what it was. I mean, these were higher yield levels than what they're going to look at in third world. They're hovering 2, 3, maybe 4 megagrams per hectare. But a huge benefit and making valuable utilization of a resource fertilizer that they can't afford. The other one I want to go back and look at is that what can we see? How can we embed a lot of these things that are there? Dr. Freeman was another former graduate student, was in the room. I didn't pay him enough to stay. And he's a big guy, so I'll have to see what I'm going to do. But all these little things that are in there that I think I can educate that farmer and producer, this is obviously wheat, but I think that human sensor is something that we have to think about more in terms of education and educating him or her. This is El Salvador. This is the kind of slopes where this corn is being produced. And then the top slide was actually a picture I took in 1987 when I worked there that was a reminder of, to me, on that social component, because there's, I don't know how many, this is their 12-row planter that that you can see, that the social part of it was important. And so our hand planters kind of removing that social component because they cannot afford to have so many of these hand planters. You know, NGOs can subsidize just so much, and that's a model that we're using. But the social component was important, and they liked planting those fields together, except for the one guy out in the front that he was kind of a loner. He got mad at his fellow producers, but they plant together. So different things that if you work abroad, and having spent 6 years of my life, I don't know, you think differently. I think it's made me a better scientist over the years. I turned 60 this year, and I don't know. I think about those times that I spent and lived in Central America and Mexico that have helped me. The cool thing in terms of the hand planter and where it can actually go is that 2 megagrams per hectare is a common number. This is what they produce for maize, whether it's sub-Saharan Africa or whether it's Central America, whether it's Colombia, Venezuela, take your pick. They're producing 2 megagrams per hectare on these marginal landscapes. Again, that's a corn yield. But the cool thing is that then the application for these environments is very similar. So we believe that there's these 30 million hectares of corn that are planted and produced just like this. And that's the exact same amount of the 30 million hectares of corn or 88 million acres of corn that we have in the U.S. And so there's clearly an opportunity. And then the other one for us on the hand planter, and it has taken forever, is that I have a potential market for 30 million hand planters because of the average farm size that is 1 hectare or 2.2 acres. So one of the benefits that has come from the hand planter is clearly ergonomic, where the back issues, and especially for a lot of the women that are doing the really difficult work that's out there, that one of the things in Uganda they liked about the hand planter was that the ease on their back. Obviously, the most important to them was getting this chemically treated seed out of their hands, because no matter where you go in the world, maize seed is really good. I mean, there's some exceptions, but for the most part, the maize seed that's out there is really good, but it's also chemically treated, and it was not intended. The technologies didn't necessarily match because it was not intended to be handled by hand. So this woman wanted the hand planter because of that issue, and she was well aware of. A lot of different issues. I just felt like that digitizing that human sensor, as per the title, that I got to think about harmony, all of those things that were on that landscape. But we've also had competition over the hand planter in some of these places that they don't want that competition. You know, it's like leading and giving them an added source of angst because we don't have enough hand planters that are there. So social issues are clearly very, very important. Slope, proximity, placement, whether it's weed density that's out there, that human sensor is so incredibly complicated that I'm kind of taking it for granted. But so long as I can convince them and show them all these different things that they are able to embed in that hand planter as they go out there and plant, then the value increases. So one of our graduate students in Uganda sent me this. This is our machine shop in Stillwater where we have produced all of these hand planters. You know, I asked him, you know, is this going to take off in Uganda? And he's been there for a couple of years, got his MS with us, and he said, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, so long as I can get that price down, and that is an issue that we're dealing with. I think about this all the time. But the cool part of this is that the same biplant stuff that we're doing with an applicator that Marv Stone had built for us in 2010 is precisely the same thing that we're doing with the hand planter, putting down that fertilizer nitrogen in close proximity with that plant, and that I can actually guide that so that that human sensor is making sure that I put the ergonomics and the strength back into that to put that next to the plant and below the ground. And that was some of the work from Paul Hodgen, who was at the University of Nebraska, did in terms of showing the importance of getting that proximity right. And then, of course, that's embedded in that hand planter, getting it below the surface. So is this a crop sensor? Am I using that crop sensor? And the answer is absolutely yes. And I can teach him or her all of these different components that are embedded in the use of that hand planter, but I've got to invest in education. I don't necessarily have to show them all the research that went into this to know why and this works, but I do have to at least cover the surface and embody that, because these are smart people, and we just have to spend more time with education. But a lot of the research that we did that's listed there, I don't know, it's a really cool component that's embedded in that planter that the producer does not necessarily know. But it doesn't change importance. So the benefits is removing chemically treated seed, decreased soil erosion by having that homogeneity of plant stands, because I'm dropping one seed for every strike. Accommodate mid-season in application by changing that internal drum, placing urea below the surface instead of getting it on the surface where there's huge volatilization losses. And And the other one is that if they're investing in that in fertilizer, we have to make sure that we get as big a bang out of that buck for that investment. And if they're broadcasting it, they lost 50% of their investment. Straight up. And especially in these regions, relative humidity is quite high. Lots of countries, I think that we have 350 hand planters out there right now, and that keeps growing every single day. The issue that we are up against is being able to produce these at a low enough cost to get them out there. OSU does have a patent on this, but the thought process is that if OSU makes a penny off of this project, then every last one of us needs to be lashed 50 times in public somewhere, because the idea of this is 100% a service project. Because we put it out there on the web and it has kind of taken off, there's a lot of people want to use it for other things. So the guys from Illinois had called me about using it for their mosquito abatement project all around the Great Lakes, that they want to put these chemicals down where they can't get out there with any kind of equipment. And so the hand planter's perfect. So we basically went out back out to our machine shop, had a drum built that would deliver the amount of chemical that they wanted per strike for the mosquito abatement project around the Great Lakes. And that was fun, where, you know, they find it on the web and they go, you know, hand planter, because they're thinking, well, a hand planter could work as well. And this is exactly what they wanted. So we worked with them, our engineers. Thankfully, we have an incredible engineering group at OSU that allow us to kind of move forward. Squash production, pumpkin production, wildlife food plots. The hunters want to put down different seeds in different areas that they can't get equipment into to feed the animals that they want to hunt later. Home gardeners and some others that are there. But no, the issue, there's a lot of words. I'm kind of dizzy, so I won't read that. We have to match the technology with the need. We have to match it with that human sensor, and we have to educate that human sensor. This is where this started. This is those landscapes that I worked in. This picture was taken in 1987, and this is where this whole idea of the hand planter came from. But we look at that picture and don't think an awful lot of it, but I can communicate to you precisely why we're doing what we're doing by seeing that. So this man that was on that same slope, just the reverse side, that I took in 1987, and what I thought about when I got to this slide was that why had it taken 30 years for us to get to this? You know, I was like, how stupid have I been to not have done this faster and to get this out there? Kind of an embarrassment, but that is where we are, and I think that we've got a lot of signs that we're going to be able to move forward with NGO support, where they'll ante up to buy 50 hand planters and maybe pay for half of that cost, and that the farmer might have to invest, I don't know, anywhere between $5 and $10 is the price that we're looking at right now. We don't want the farmer to put in zero. The farmer's got to put in something, and that's the price that we're wanting to get to. So that's the model that we have. And so this is my last slide, but you know, how exactly do we digitize that human sensor? And the kinker is I've got to spend the time on education with those producers so that they know that value, because I can explain that to them, but it's all embedded in that hand planter. So long as I did the work, I put those trials out and made sure that this product was going to deliver those yield increases that were so needed. And so the answer is education. And, you know, I put this slide up of Nelson Mandela, who spent 27 years in prison. And I have now spent 27 years at OSU, and I can't imagine being in prison for 27 years and have the positive attitude that this man has had, and it's delivered to so many. But you know, his quote said, you know, education, that these are the kinds of things. And then as further embarrassment was, I don't know, it's like 200 BC to about 700 AD was the construction of the Great Wall that didn't keep anybody out the first day, and it's not keeping anybody out today. It's actually a tourist trap. The Great Wall of Berlin, it's not great, but the Berlin Wall. And we're going to invest in a stupid wall, you know, on the border of Mexico. It's just, I've become kind of a socialist. We should be building schools. We should be building schools along that border. And again, consistent with Nelson Mandela's comment, educating. And maybe in key strategic places along that border in Mexico, Obregón, that Yaqui Valley, we have more schools there to increase production that could benefit both Mexico and the U.S. I mean, I think there's solutions that make walls look rather embarrassing. But that's all I had. I know the title was curious, you know, digitizing. What are you guys doing? We just have to educate. We've got this computer, this human brain computer that is, you know, many, many megabytes, and I just got to educate that human computer that's a more powerful CPU than anything else I've got out there. So with that, again, thanks to my former students for coming. I'll settle up with you when we leave, but in terms of what I owe you, but thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ron. We have a few minutes, and in fact, actually after his this talk, we have about 10 minutes to even get back to the previous presenters, speakers. If you have any questions that you have, it's now time to get those out and thrown out to the speaker while they're here. Questions?
It's fun to see students make their presentations. Yes.
Are you exporting these tools to Africa or Central America, or are you pretty much trying to teach them to build it inside the country?
Right now, we're basically shipping the planters to whomever asked for one. They sent us a note that. And they have a plan for it. We are going to ship those. We are using some specific funds that we have specifically for international ag to pay for those. But and that's not that's not sustainable either. So the end game for us is to build them in country. We have to. And we already have some things in play that they have been built in Uganda, but they need to be built there. We're spending $250 a planter. That's not sustainable. And then we'll spend, what, $150 to ship them to Uganda? It's ridiculous. Granted, we have the funds, but we need to drop that price. We need to build them there. And they have really good engineering services as well. We've gone back to China to see if we can build them cheaper with the Chinese, and we can get them down to about $25 in China if we had an order of 10,000 planters. But we know what the end game is. It's a great question. We've just got to get them built there so that they, if there's going to be a profit, the profit needs to be there. But again, that one slide, it's like, why does it take us 30 years? And the answer is, the sad answer is I didn't care enough, frankly, because I was exposed to that, and I should have been working on this from day one. As it turns out, when I was promoted to full professor, I don't know, 15, 18 years ago, that's really when I started to work on this, because I needed to have some liberty to say something distasteful to an administrator if he was giving me trouble, which they do, and they like to. And not all of them like to go to international stuff. In fact, there's some views on international issues that are not positive. But this has been the most gratifying thing I've done in my entire career. So I cannot tell you how much fun it is to work on it, because I know where it's going to get used. I can see the product. So, I don't know. And thanks for coming again to the students. Okay.
I got the check.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.